now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio, your classroom of the airwaves. Today, in our Happy Holidays edition, we're going to talk about the guy who was the father of the disk drive. It's an interesting story. You'll like that. And if you get the right answer based on that story, you'll win free food. We also will talk about some things that are seasonal in nature. The science of snowflakes, frozen turkey, and also driving on ice. We'll also talk about one of Dr. Schertz's favorite toys. But first, it's time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Thank you, Mr. Big Boy.
Yes.
A little bit of a delay, but, you know.
The old touchscreen's got us.
Yeah, he's going to have to be standing closer to the mic next time. sitting back with his feet on the desk, drinking coffee,
I'm
is not
you.
The way to get right to the mic.
He's had 3 weeks off to get this right.
Now. I know. We have an email from Robert Tyler. He's the police chief down in Texas.
Yeah.
Dear Dr. Schertz, could you explain the recent incident involving the certificate authority DigiNotar? That's the one in Norway, by the way. Robert brought my attention to this. Could you explain what a certificate authority is and how this relates to security on the Internet and the World Wide Web? I never miss an episode of Tech Talk, and I'm listening to all the previous podcasts via iTunes. Thank you for such a great broadcast, Robert Tyler. Robert, make certain to go and rate Tech Talk on iTunes.
because I
love to get those ratings. Well, as you know, whenever you are, let's talk about what a certificate authority is. When you are trying to communicate with somebody on the Internet, if you don't want your conversation eavesdropped on, you need to encrypt the data stream between you and the person you're talking to over the Internet with some kind of encryption. Now, that means you've got to have a key to encrypt and then a key to de-encrypt. Now, in the old days, they had what they called symmetric keys, where two people would share the same key. So you would encrypt with one key, then they would de-encrypt it with the same key. Now, that means you'd have to send the key to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't send a key over the Internet because you can't encrypt it when
right.
you send it the first time. And I guess you could send it in a letter and send the key, but it's just not convenient. So they came up with this asymmetric keying concept where somebody will publish their public key. And then you use the public key to encrypt a message, and you send it to the person who owns the public key, and they have a corresponding private key that you don't know and no one knows. They de-encrypt it with that private key, and they get the message. So only someone who has the private key can de-encrypt it if you've encrypted the message with the public key. And so that's the way it goes. Now, the question is, if you have somebody's public key, is that really the person you're talking to, and is that the correct key? You really want to know that. So you go to a website, you say, well, is that really Google, or is it not really Google? And then there's a certificate that Google has, and there's a certificate authority. So what happens is that your computer checks that certificate, then they check the certificate authority, and the certificate authority says, yep, that's Google. You say, good. I'll use the public key, and I'll send this message to Google. So the certificate authority ensures that the person you're talking to is the person you're talking to.
Ah.
So that's really the key, and of course, that means the certificate authority must be absolutely rock solid and not hackable. So if somebody could break into the certificate authority's database and steal some certificates, you've got a problem. And that's what happened in Norway. I'll talk about that a little later. That was a great question, and I'll just jump to that very briefly.
Since
I'm here, this DigiNorway. What happened was they're actually in the Netherlands, and they filed for bankruptcy on last Monday. Now, They were just bought for $13 million in January by Vasco Data Security International. Now, that was really a bad investment. Okay, January they paid $13 million for DigiNotarks on page six.
And then
they had the hacking thing about a month ago, and then they went bankrupt this last week. So they lost all $13 million. What happened was, in late August, DigiNotar admitted that hackers had illegally generated numerous secure socket layer certificates. That's the HTTPS kind of encryption on the Internet. And they had stolen one for Google.com that was later found to have been used to spy on some 300,000 Iranians through their Gmail accounts. So the Iranian government apparently used this fake certificate to trick people to thinking that they were talking to Gmail, and then they spied on the people. Because then what they would do, they would then relay the messages to Gmail, and they were like a man in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So the person actually didn't realize that somebody was unencrypting their. So what happened was, you get a man in the middle. He's got a fake certificate. You talk to him through a secure socket layer, and then he sets up a secure socket layer with the Gmail account. And then he then forwards your message on, but while it's in his server, it's de-encrypted. So the man in the middle can spy on all of the traffic going through. That's actually what happened. Now, DigiNotar confirmed that they'd first discovered the intrusion on July 19th, but did not disclose the breach to browser makers or to the French or to the Dutch government, which used these certificates to validate identities of many websites. An investigation sponsored by the Dutch government revealed that the hacker or hackers first compromised DigiNotar servers in mid-June and made off with more than 500 certificates. After DigiNotar went public, all five major browser makers, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Mozilla, and Opera, issued updates that barred users from reaching sites secured with DigiNotar issued certificates, and the Dutch Independent Post and Telecommunications Authority, OPTA, terminated DigiNotar certificate right to issue certificates, preventing it from issuing any further certificates, which was their only business. Mm-hmm. So as you would expect, they filed for bankruptcy. So the real issue here on DigiNotar, if they would have notified everybody of this breach as soon as they discovered it and taken proactive action, you know, to stop the damage, I don't think people would have been so rough on them. But the fact that they didn't tell anybody until they were outed irritated everybody, and they were just shut down.
Wow.
That was a great question, Robert. Sorry it took so long to get through all of that, but it's
complicated.
It's probably good to understand this certificate business. We have an email from Margaret. Dear Dr. Schertz, there appear to be a lot of issues with Squeeze Box Internet Radio. For about a week now, I can't access Bloomberg Business Radio on my internet radio brought from Logitech. This station is the only reason that I purchased the Squeezebox product, and it is the main station I need to access daily. When I press the preset button that I assigned to Bloomberg Business Radio, I get a recording telling me that my setup is not compatible with this station. I just found out that Bloomberg changed their website to Flash Medium. I told that Logitech must first update its firmware to support Flash. How do I get this fixed? I'm most appreciative if you can solve and explain this and tell me how, again, to gain access to the Bloomberg station. I have to listen to this daily for my job. Thanks a lot. All the best, Margaret. Well, Margaret, you're not the only one. Everybody with Squeezebox is having your problem, and it's all over the blogs. And this is not a Squeezebox issue. This is, actually, Bloomberg did change their protocol now they're using Flash Media instead of Windows Media to send the audio streams. Now, actually, you see, Bloomberg is actually in business. And many people that are listening, say with smartphone apps like TuneIn or Squeezebox Internet Radio, actually aren't using Flash, so they don't see these ads that come up in the Flash player. And what they want you to do is to listen to it with your computer with the Flash player on, so display ads are coming up because the display ad people are paying them to provide this stream.
Mm-hmm.
So when you use Squeezebox, they're not getting any display ads. So I finally searched around the Bloomberg site, and this is what they had to say. And actually, that's, you know, my suspicions were actually validated there. Please accept my apologies for any frustration. This is, I'm quoting a sort of a letter to the public from Squeezebox, or from Bloomberg. Please accept my apologies for any frustration we may have caused with changes we recently made to the Windows Media streams for Bloomberg Radio and TV. What's going on is that we've been in a year-long process of upgrading our web audio and video streams to higher quality. At some point, we had to decommission the old infrastructure, so we did. We were unaware of usage by Squeezebox. And since we don't have a syndication deal with Squeezebox, we really don't care.
There you go.
There you go. Now, and I don't think Squeezebox is going to pay any syndication fees. There mm-hmm. are some very complicated ways to unwrap the Flash wrapper around that stream, but it means you've got to save the file and unwrap it. It's probably not something that's worthwhile for you to do. So I would suggest that all the Squeezebox owners write to Squeezebox and say, look, guys, why don't you try to get a syndication deal with Bloomberg, and we'll pay for it. Just tell us how much it would be. Now, the programming is still available on Bloomberg. You just go to Bloomberg.com/radio, and, of course, you'll have to use Flash, and you'll have to look at those display ads. But I guess you could just turn off the monitor. You don't actually have to. We got an email from Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes. Okay.
Okay, Snake Eyes. I don't know where that name came from, but there we go. Dear Dr. Schertz, do you ever do book reviews or profile physics professors? I'm interested in knowing more. Harvard professor of physics Randall, author of Warped Passages, has earned praise for her science and her skill at making it all accessible to the general reader. Here she proves a fascinating guide to the latest discoveries and challenges in theoretical physics. Thanks, Snake Eyes. Well, I'll take a look at her, Snake Eyes. Normally, I don't do that type of person because I'm looking for somebody that's actually invented something that turns into a business. And occasionally, you'll get a physicist that does that, but generally speaking, people that write reviews about physics or make it more accessible, I don't. But I'll take a look to see if there's something there that would fit. But this does bring up one thing that I would like to say. I love to have suggestions for profiles in IT. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, the man that I'm going to do this week, who was the developer of Carbonite, the co-founder of Carbonite, was a suggestion from a reader about a month ago. So I do like these suggestions, and I'll check this one out. If you have any more, just send them right in. We certainly try to get them in as we can. I have an email from Howard. I have accidentally deleted everything inside my hard drive. How do I restore it? Thanks, Howard. Well, Howard, you could just simply restore your most recent backup if you have one. Then once restored, you've only lost whatever's changed since the last time you backed it up. But I'm thinking you don't have a backup. This is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you want to immediately stop using the drive, because if you try to reinstall the operating system, do anything, you're going to be overwriting files. And I suspect what you want to get off the thing are not your Windows operating system. You want to get off document files. So then you want to remove the hard drive and hook it up as an external hard drive to another computer. And if you go down to the computer store, they'll give you connectors that will allow you to do that. You can get a box that will allow you to plug the hard drive in, and it has a USB output. You can plug it into the USB. And so then once you attach it as an external hard drive, there are a number of programs that will look for deleted files and recover them. You see, the file deletion process, and so we'll just check for any files that are there. If they're deleted, they'll restore them. Whenever you delete a file, it just deletes the first letter in the index, and then Windows knows that file is now deleted. It doesn't actually erase the information. So it will go through all of these indexes, and it will look for any information which is there, which can be recovered. And there's a very good program for this, which is free, Recuva.
Uh-huh.
Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A. And I'll give the link to that. That's piriform.com/recuva, piriform.com/recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A. And you just turn on Recuva, and it just searches for any file that it can dig up, and it'll actually locate lost emails and everything. Now the problem is it's gonna locate a lot of stuff that you've actually deleted and didn't want. It's gonna recover everything. So you're gonna have to go through and painstakingly review every file and to see which ones you want to keep. Now what I would advise, since you don't want to overwrite the data, if you find a file you want to keep, just don't save it on that hard drive. Take and copy that file to another location. So you're not actually writing anything to that hard drive until you recovered everything. Because if you save a file on that, chances are it's going to be written on top of some other data that you want to recover. So just, you could then create a subdirectory in your computer that you're using to read this thing and just copy all those files to that subdirectory. Chances are you're going to get everything you want. Unless, you know, because your hard drive is functional, you just actually had an operator failure. Well, those were great questions. And
yes.
Thanks for those emails. If you want to send us more emails, we love them. Send an email to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll bring them up on the show, the next week or the week after that.
This is Tech Talk Radio, your classroom of the airwaves. You're listening to us on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Profiles in IT is next. Snow is falling and friends are calling you.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it, and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Jim Russ, and now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
We're going to talk about Alan Field Shugart.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Field Shugart is widely considered to be the pioneer of the disk drive. Alan was born September 7, 1930 in Los Angeles, California. Received a Bachelor of Science in Engineering Physics from the University of Redlands. I like this guy already.
Damn.
Another physicist. In 1951, he began his career at IBM in San Jose, where he worked on the IBM 305 RAMAC. R-A-M-A-C. He worked on the RAMAC. The RAMAC was the first commercial computer that used the moving head hard disk drive, you know, which we now use all the time now, but this was the first one to ever use it. Shugart contributed to or managed a number of difficult drive tasks, disk drive tasks in his 18-year career at IBM, including the groundbreaking work on RAMAC's 305, IBM's first disk drive. The floppy disk was invented by IBM engineers led by Alan Shugart. The first floppy disk. Now, that first floppy disk was an 8-inch flexible plastic disk coated with magnetic iron oxide to write computer data on both sides. The first Shugart floppy held 100 kilobytes of data. It was nicknamed floppy because the disk was flexible. The floppy disk was considered revolutionary because it provided for the first time an easy way to transport data from one computer to another computer. Shugart rose to become director of engineering in 1969, but left that same year to become vice president of product development at a competitor, Memorex.
Aha!
But IBM, anyway, in 1971, 2 years later, introduced the first memory disk, which is now known as the floppy disk. Shugart only remained at Memorex till 1972. Then he launched his own company, Shugart Associates. Took several loyal followers with him. They worked on, among other things, perfecting the 8-inch floppy disk and making it a mass-produced device. After a dispute over the direction of the company with his board, Shugart left in 74, only 2 years after starting it, moved to Santa Cruz, opened a bar with some friends, bought a fishing boat, and wrote a book. I think he's got fed up with all the technology stuff. But he couldn't stay out of technology too long. In 76, he started working on the 5 1/4-inch flexible disk, which he was developing for Wang Labs. Now, the reason that was 5 1/4 inches is kind of interesting. A couple of his engineers were talking with Alan Wang, who was the CEO of Wang Laboratories. And they were at a bar talking about this new disc he wanted. And Wang motioned to a drink napkin that was sitting on the table. And he says, I'd like the disc to be about that size. It turns out that a napkin at a bar is 5 1/4 inches on a side. And there is the 5 1/4-inch floppy disk.
That's crazy. That's amazing.
Now, in 1979 is when he made his really big move. He and Finnis Connor founded Seagate Technology with $1.5 million in startup funding with the mission of producing hard disk drives for the personal computer. These were high-density, high-capacity disk drives.
Mm-hmm.
His first commercial product was a 5 1/4-inch, 5-megabyte hard drive, which was high capacity then, sold for $1,500.
Amazing.
5-megabyte hard drive. Within a decade, Seagate became the world's largest producer of disk drives, and you could say that the technology that Shugart developed was responsible for this wide-scale drop in the price of storage, which is fueling the internet and allows people like Gmail or Google to give 7 gigabytes of storage with your Gmail account. It's really quite impressive. Within a decade, Seagate was selling more disk drives than any other company in the world. In 1998, Shugart resigned his position from Seagate. You see, these creative guys, they're kind of in and out. So he left. Actually, he was fired by the board because he was just eccentric. See, here's the thing. 2 years before he was fired, he launched an unsuccessful campaign to elect his dog Ernest to Congress. This is in 76.
This is great.
He later wrote a book about it, Ernest Goes to Washington. Well, not exactly.
No.
Then in 2000, he backed a failed ballot initiative in California that would give voters the option of choosing none of the above in elections.
There's an idea.
So he was sort of on the wacky side, but he was... He started a 5-star restaurant and wrote a book about that. The guy with a spurts of creativity, but he is well recognized as the driving force behind storage media. And he is one of the most influential and admired figures in that area. In 1997, he won the Ray Johnson Award for the Advancement of Information Storage Technology. Shugart died December 12, 2006 in Monterey, California.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's kind of sad to see all of these eccentrics are dying away and we're getting all these guys that are just, going with the VCs and the suits. I think
they're money guys now.
This guy wasn't motivated by money really. He just loved technology, and if things didn't go well, he just quit and start a bar and buy a fishing boat and do something else for a while and then go back in it for a while.
So why not?
There you go. Alan Field Shugart, the man behind low-cost storage.
I find it amazing that the size of this is based on the size of a cocktail napkin.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio. You're listening to us on one of these fine radio stations, WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, or WTOP FM HD2 Washington. Stand by. Your chance to win a fabulous prize in the pop quiz comes up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it, and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
Hey, it's me, Mr. Mistletoe, Jim Russ, here on Tech Talk Radio from the Virtual Faculty Lounge. And of course, as this is a classroom of the airwaves, there is always a quiz. But the good news is you don't just get an A if you get the answer right. You get free food from us. You get to go to the Escoffier at Stratford University. Fine dining on the campus of Stratford University, either at Falls Church or in Woodbridge, Virginia. Earlier in Profiles in IT, we talked about Alan Shugart, the father of the disk drive. He launched an unsuccessful campaign to get his dog elected to Congress. If you know the name of his dog, you need to call me right now. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, call me at 877-936-9333. If you know the name of Alan Shugart's dog, the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio.
I think we should talk about the physics of the snow a bit.
Yes.
Should we take a break before that or do that now?
Let's do that. Let's do it now.
Well, there are several things that you should be aware of when you're in slippery roads.
Oh, yeah.
Number one is speed is your enemy.
Correct.
The faster you go, the longer it takes to stop. Now, you're basically going, let's get some physics. As you start speeding up, you get kinetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
Kinetic energy is one half the mass times the velocity squared. So your kinetic energy goes up as the square of your velocity. So if you double your speed, you have four times the kinetic energy. That's why going a little bit faster has a tremendous impact on how long it takes to stop.
Right.
And I just can't, you know, we're driving over here. There were these hot doggers on, four-wheel drive,
yep,
shooting down the beltway about twice as fast as the other traffic. Now, because they had four-wheel drive, they had no trouble ramping up the speed. But I can tell you that four-wheel drive does not help them stop.
Correct, exactly.
They've got that same one-half MV squared, and because they're SUVs, they're even heavier.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have a rude awakening with that kind of speed, and so it's just not a good idea.
Exactly.
Now, there's another principle when you're driving on icy roads. The moment just before your tires begin slipping is the point of maximum traction. So when you're trying to stop, in the old days, you would pump your brakes. Now, the point of that is you pump your brakes, and then they would start, your wheels would lock up, then you would ease off the brake, and you would go through the transition of having your wheels lock up, then you'd let them turn, then lock up, turn, lock up, and you'd go through that transition of maximum traction on a slippery road. Now, the new kind of braking technology,
anti-lock braking, right?
Anti-lock braking. What that does, you just hold down the pedal, and when they lock up, they release. And so you can feel your anti-lock brakes begin to chatter as they're going back and forth through that point. And that's the sort of the fastest way that you can stop. Now, some people don't necessarily understand that, and they put down their foot on the brake, and then all of a sudden the brake pedal starts chattering,
rumbling, yeah.
And then they take their foot off because they think there's something wrong. But actually, it's supposed to do that.
Exactly. What's happening is it's taking brakes off of the wheels that are locked.
Mm-hmm.
So those wheels become free spinning. And
mm-hmm.
the ones that aren't locked up have the brake pressure applied to them. So.
Now, the other thing is you've got something called posit traction. Now, you know, whenever you're driving in the old style cars, when one wheel, you've got two wheels that are powered if you're on two-wheel drive, and when one wheel would start spinning, all the power would go to the spinning wheel, and then you couldn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so with posit traction, if one wheel starts spinning, it transfers the power to the other wheel. So when I'm driving on the beltway, there's a little light that comes on when posit traction is activated. So if I see the little posit traction light beginning to flicker, it means I've got too much gas.
Right.
So then I back off on the gas so I don't see the posit traction.
Exactly.
So those
and sometimes you can feel that when the posit traction light comes on. You can feel that you're not really...
You can feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing is when you are sort of on a hill going up a hill and it's hard to get started, you're always better off being, you know, starting very gently, because if you gun the gas and you just start spinning your wheels, you get no traction.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, even though I've got an automatic transmission, I go into a manual shift mode. I shift down to first gear,
right,
and then I start very slowly, and I try to keep the wheels from spinning out, and that allows me to start up on a little hill. And I just hate it when I'm behind somebody and they start gunning it and then their wheels start spinning and they just don't know how to start on a hill. That can actually, you know, create a whole traffic jam.
It certainly can.
And then the final thing is when you are, if you start to skid and you turn your wheels in the opposite direction of the skid, you'll just start spinning around.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to steer in the direction of the skid, because the point is you want your front wheels to start turning and stop sliding. And once they start turning, they have some degree of traction, and then you can bring the car back slowly from the skid, which is in the wrong direction.
Exactly. And the other thing that people do wrong in this kind of weather is if they wind up starting to run off the road,
mm-hmm.
correcting too quickly. That's how you overturn the car. You try to gradually get back onto the road instead of jerking the wheel and getting all back on in one.
Now,
once. Yep.
Now I went to this calculator. Let's just say going 30 kilometers per hour, that's around 18 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
On a dry road, you can stop in 4 meters. That'd be about 12 feet.
Okay.
12 feet. Going 18 miles an hour, if you just cram on the brakes, you could stop in about 12 feet. On an icy road with a coefficient of friction of 0.1,
mm-hmm. that means
it takes 34 meters or about 100 feet to stop. So you go from 12 feet to 100 feet, and you're only, that's if you're sliding, and that's without anti-lock brakes, and you're only going 18 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's because of this kinetic energy, 1/2 mv². So the key is go slower, have more distance between you and the car in front of you, and just let those hot doggers go around you. Don't try to speed up the stamp with them because they're eventually going to spin out and something bad's going to happen to them.
Well, that's the thing. How many times have you had somebody blow past you on the beltway and then within a couple miles you see them off the road in a ditch someplace?
That's right.
And it's usually the guy in the sports car with the rear-wheel drive and the racing, the performance tires.
That's right. So that's all you wanted to know about the physics of icy roads.
This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. We're going to talk about snowflakes coming up here on Tech Talk.
Well, way up north where the air gets cold there.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it, and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. It is Christmas Eve. I'm Jim Russ, and this is Tech Talk Radio.
I really like snow. Well, you know, I haven't had a chance to do any snow skiing. Do you snow ski, Jim? Or
no, I'd break my neck if I snow skied. I'm not good at I'm not very coordinated.
Snow ski as opposed to the other kind of skiing?
Yeah, water skiing as opposed to water skiing.
All right, yeah. I've snow skied in the past, yeah.
Yeah, I have not snow skied.
I wish I'd been there to see that.
I haven't done snow skiing for a few years, but I really do enjoy snow skiing. Get out in the with the wind in the mountains and just go like the breeze. It's wonderful. But the question is, with snowflakes, are two snowflakes ever alike? Now, there was a guy by the name of Wilson Snowflake Bentley who took over 6,000 photographs of individual snowflakes between the early 1880s and until his death in 1931. No two snowflakes were alike in his entire 50 years of research.
Well, at least he put his life to good use.
Now, snowflakes tend to have a six-sided geometry, and that comes from the hexagonal lattice structure of the ice molecule, which has six-sided symmetry. So most snowflakes have some sort of six-sided symmetry as they grow. But the fact is, it is true that no two snowflakes are alike. I should say no two complex snowflakes are alike. If you have a very small snowflake, maybe just made up of 10 water molecules, it would be very simple. There might be some of those that are the same, but if you get a large complex snowflake, no two are alike. Now, here's how we can analyze it. First of all, you've got three variations that occur within snowflakes. You've got variations in isotopes that can be distributed throughout the snowflake, and I'll explain that a little bit further. You got variations in stacking faults, and then you got variations in growth dynamics. Now, it turns out that isotopes are like you can get atoms, stable atoms of a different weight, like, say, oxygen. Water is made up of oxygen, two oxygens and one oxygen and two hydrogen, H2O. And occasionally you'll get heavy water, deuterium, which is an isotope of hydrogen, and it's basically double the weight. It has an extra neutron in the nucleus, so it's atomic weight of 2 instead of 1, which is what hydrogen is. And those are distributed about one molecule out of every 5,000 molecules that actually is deuterium. 1,000 out of, so the deuterium molecules could be distributed randomly throughout the snowflake, you see, and there are a lot of ways that could be done. In addition, am I hearing music coming up?
I'm trying to play Winter Wonderland for you since you're talking about snowflakes.
Now, in addition, there's also an isotope of oxygen that occurs quite often. It has an atomic weight of 18 instead of the normal atomic weight of 16. So if you take all these variations, that you would have just in isotopes, it's unlikely that the isotope distribution for any two snowflakes would be the same. I mean, so just from an atomic level, they probably wouldn't be different, or they would be different. And so that's the first variation that you probably wouldn't see very often. Now, the second variation would be in stacking faults. When a crystal grows, the molecules don't stack together perfectly. You get stacking faults. They could be distributed. And you could argue that no two snowflakes could be alike because the stacking faults would be variable. And the third variation is that there are growth dynamics. As the snowflake is falling, it's encountering different dust particles, different air, encounters with the wind, and it grows in a slightly different way because each snowflake takes a different path. So if you take all of these three factors together, someone did a calculation, and they calculated that there are more variations on the way that a complex snowflake could grow than there are atoms in the universe.
Does temperature play any role in this? In addition, if it's very close to freezing or if it's really cold?
Yeah, temperatures do a... If you got very colder temperatures, the ice crystal tips are sharper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sharper looking, and more attractive.
Snowflakes that hurt when they hit you in the
face.
Yeah,
that's
right.
If they're big. I mean, and they're now at warmer temperatures, the snowflakes grow slower, more rounder. They have less intricate shapes. So temperature does make a difference. There have been, by the way, the largest snowflake that ever fell was in Siberia, and it was almost 8 inches in diameter.
Now that would hurt.
Now I've never seen that, but. But there you go. So that is the question.
That's more like a meteor than a snowflake.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Nice meteor.
So Tech Talk can answer the question. Every snowflake is unique.
Unique.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. We're going to talk about one of Dr. Shirt's favorite toys coming up here on Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it, and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio, your classroom of the airwaves. Happy Christmas Eve. I'm Jim Russ.
And all week, I've been working with Rovio.
Oh.
Rovio, my mobile webcam. It's my new toy.
Huh?
If you want to see about Rovio, you can go to myrovio.com. Myrovio.com. You can see what he looks like. Rovio is a mobile robotic web camera with omnidirectional movement. It actually has three wheels, tri-wheels, and you can run these wheels in all the different directions. You can actually rotate it in place. It can go sideways, front ways, back. It's very easy to manipulate. And it has a docking station that projects two infrared spots on the ceiling. It gets its location, they call it the North Star Navigation System, from those infrared dots on the ceiling. So when I want to tell it to go back and charge up, I just say, go home, and it goes back and goes right in the docking station on its own. Or if the battery gets low, it goes back and docks on its own. So it knows how to get home with those infrared spots on the ceiling. But if you go to the next room, of course, there's no navigation. But you can buy additional infrared spot projectors for other rooms, and it can actually keep track of which spot it's looking at, and you could actually navigate around your whole house if you really wanted to. Now, this thing is actually communicated with using my Wi-Fi connection, so that I've got a wireless access point in the house, and so I communicate it with the Wi-Fi connection, and so I can actually point the camera up and down and around. I can walk this thing around. I've got complete navigation controls. In fact, I'm sitting here in the studio. I took him out of the foyer. I marched him in the kitchen. I'm watching the activities in the kitchen going on right now to see if there's going to be any breakfast on the table when I get home.
Oh, I doubt that.
No, it doesn't look like any breakfast is coming along. But the dishwasher is getting cleaned out, so
that's
things
good.
Are moving along.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, this was a list price of $300. The street price is $250. Now, I paid $300 for it because I was so anxious to get it. You know, the third Tuesday of every November is actually Sucker Tuesday. So if you buy anything on Sucker Tuesday, everything is at list price.
Uh-huh.
And so for those people that always complain about that they paid too much and they always want to make sure they have something to complain about,
right,
buy your things on Sucker Tuesday and you're going to pay list price. So I bought this on Sucker Tuesday and paid $300 for it. I think probably yesterday you could have gotten down to $200.
Probably.
But I love my Rovio. Now, so I got this thing set up. And I was running around at home getting this thing operating quite nicely. And I said, you know, I need to operate this thing from the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means that I have to actually go back through my firewall and talk to Rovio. That is easier said than done. There are a lot of tricks to do this thing. Now, what I'm going to do is explain to you how I actually did it, and in the process, teach you just a little bit about networking. I'm not going to get too deep into this thing. The router, the wireless router, any kind of firewall, does something what they call network address translation. It takes an internal computer address called an IP address and converts it to an external IP address. Your network only has one external IP address. All the computers on it go out through basically one IP address.
Mm-hmm.
And the internal IP addresses are not registered with anybody because everybody uses the same IP address internally. The external IP addresses have to be registered with your domain name server so that, you know, signals can get to and from your location. Now, the address on each computer has two parts. This is part two of the tutorial.
Okay.
It has an IP address, which is sort of like the street address of a house,
right,
which would be your computer address.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the port number. The port number would be like if you have a hotel, the room number. So you send a letter to a particular street address, room 22, and then they know to take it to room 22. Well, in a computer, you don't have rooms, you have programs. So every program has a different port number.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key element. So you have to have port number and address numbers. So the network address translation device translates the internal address to the external address. It translates them. It also translates any ports that you're dealing with. Now, here was the thing. In order for me to use this webcam, I have to communicate with port 80, which is the web-based port, which is used for all web pages, as well as port 554, which is used for MPEG. Now, they gave me in the manual I needed to have port 80 and port 554. So in order for me to get my router to work, I've got to punch a hole in my firewall and says, okay, if an incoming port 80 comes in or an incoming port 554 comes in, I want you to forward that port address and that number to this particular device. And I gave it the internal IP address of my Rovio. So I forwarded. I used port forwarding. You can log on to your firewall. I used port forwarding. And I forwarded port 80 and port 554 to Rovio. And that should work perfectly. So last night I went out and said, well, I think I'll go to McDonald's, log on to McDonald's, and see if I can control my Rovio.
They got the Wi-Fi at the McDonald's.
Yeah, they got the Wi-Fi at the McDonald's. I would have used my neighbor's.
Did you get a hot apple pie?
No, I didn't get an apple pie. I got a chocolate fudge sundae.
Ooh.
I would have used my neighbor's Wi-Fi networks, but they've secured them all for some reason.
Oh, yeah, well, they know about you. That's why.
No, they don't let me log on to theirs anymore.
Uh-huh.
So I went down there, and the darn thing didn't work.
You're kidding me.
I said, you know, what am I doing wrong? And then I realized Verizon Fios is doing something very sneaky.
Really?
They are blocking internal port 80 requests because they don't want me to have a web server at my house
because
it would use too much bandwidth. So they do not want me to have a web server at my house. They also block incoming port 25, which is used for email server. So they don't want me to run an email server or a web server from my house. So block. Port 80 was blocked by Fios. Wasn't even getting to my browser.
That's
or wasn't
crazy.
Even getting to the firewall. So what I had to do, I had to reconfigure Rovio to have the web page activated by another port. So I changed the Rovio web port from 80 to 8080.
Uh-huh.
That's like the secondary. So I went changed it to 8080. Then I simply did port forwarding to 8080 as well as to 554. And bingo, it works perfectly.
I'm glad you understand that because I sure don't.
So that was the whole thing. It'll all be written down.
Good.
And I'm going to give all the details on this thing because, you know, it's kind of a trick. Now, when you go to your, when I go back to my particular computer, like from the studio, I have to put in the IP address, the external IP address, and you have to know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know what the external IP address is, you can log on to your router, it will tell you, or you can just go to the website, whatismyipaddress.com, and it will give you what the external IP address is. So I simply put that external IP address in my browser, and it takes me right back to my home, and I log right in without a problem. Now, I also set up something called Dynamic Domain Name Service.
You did.
Which I should,
go right into it. Go
okay.
ahead. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it turns out that you really always don't want to remember some four-digit number to go in there. It would be much nicer to say, like, do something like Rick's webcam dot something.
Uh-huh.
Or that,
yeah.
So you can go to a dynamic DNS, dynamic domain name server system, and I use dyndns.com, dyndns.com. That's dynamicdns.com, and they'll let you set up a free dynamic DNS. So what I simply did, I gave it the external IP address of my router, and then I put down the domain name that I wanted that I'm not going to give on the air here because I don't want everybody going to my particular webcam. I put the domain name that I wanted, and it was something.dyndns.org, and bingo, that domain name is mapped to that IP address. Now, the reason it's called dynamic IP address is that I registered this dynamic DNS company with my router, so if Verizon changes the external IP address on me, it automatically automatically notifies the dynamic DNS. And so that name always works.
That's pretty cool.
And that's a free service, dyndns.com. And I know that was a lot of stuff to go through, but it works now.
Coming to you from the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University, this is Tech Talk Radio, heard on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We are your classroom of the airwaves. Find out about our fine sponsors, the folks at Stratford University, by going to their website, stratford.edu. You can find out everything you ever wanted to know about this radio show by going to our website, techtalkonline.com. From there, you can find out about previous shows, see show outlines, and from that you can figure out which program you'd like to listen to based on what you're interested in. You can also subscribe to our podcast there, and more importantly, send us emails. We love your emails. Dr. Church will answer them right here on the air on Federal News Radio. Again, that website is techtalkonline.com. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio this Christmas Eve. And now we're going to talk about something a lot of you will be cooking tomorrow.
This last week, I cooked my frozen turkey. And I put a complete turkey in the oven. It was frozen. We had to buy a frozen turkey. We put it in the oven. When you put it in frozen, you simply add 50% more time to the cooking time. So this was a 20-pound turkey. Should have cooked for 4.5 hours. You add 50% on it, 6 hours and 3/4. And that darn thing cooked. And the nice thing about cooking in a frozen turkey is that the legs and the dark meat thaw first. And then the white meat thaws second, and so you end up with a perfectly cooked chicken, and I have to turkey, a perfectly cooked turkey.
Turkey, chicken, whatever.
I have to tell you, this was one of the best-looking turkeys we've ever had that was done perfectly, perfectly browned, and I just love all the prep I had to do. I just took the plastic wrap off and threw it in the oven.
So that's amazing.
That was the calculation, and that was the result on our food science experiment, the frozen turkey experiment was a complete success.
Excellent.
That's all we have time for this week on Tech Talk Radio, heard on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Make sure to check out stratford.edu. Learn about all the educational programs offered at Stratford University in Falls Church, Woodbridge, and in Richmond. Of course, go to techtalkonline.com to learn more about this program. In fact, you can listen to all of our previous programs there, sign up for the podcast, and you can send us emails. We'd love to have your emails. Dr. Schertz will answer them right here on the air on Tech Talk Radio, heard weekly every Saturday morning on Federal News Radio in Washington, D.C.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News